Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. All right. It is Sunday. It's Monday morning. Monday morning means that we review the new movies. Monday morning movie reviews. And my dad will call in and tell a joke. Jokey time. And we're going to talk about food items that are no longer around that we miss. We talked about it a little bit a couple of weeks ago, but there's so many more, and we're going to reminisce a little bit about that and much more. It was a Blackhawks Express as well. But it's basically the first big weekend of the holiday movie season. You know, it starts earlier and earlier every year. And we had some big movies open up this weekend, and we got a lot of movies to talk about. And Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every week to talk about the Monday morning movie reviews, and then Eric and I will talk about box office as well. So let's welcome these guys to the show. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's get to it. Let's see. Eric, what is tell us about Princess Cid.
Okay. Princess Cid is the new film from a writer-director named Stephen Cohn, who last did a film called Henry Gamble's Birthday Party. Significant because both these films were set here in Chicago. And the woman of the title, Cid, is a teenage girl who experienced a very kind of unspeakable tragedy when she was a young girl. She's been living with her father outside of Chicago. And he thinks that it might be good that she comes back to Chicago to where her aunt lives and works as a pretty famous writer and scholar. And so she comes back to live with her for a portion of the summer. And it sort of begins their, you know, sort of a reawakening of their relationship. It's not really a hostile relationship. She doesn't sort of have the sort of the stereotypical teenage tropes that we see, that she's angry at the world or she's just at that age. She's generally, you know, polite and good-natured and begins this sort of burgeoning, you know, reawakening relationship with her aunt. Also, meanwhile, she's also discovering sort of her newfound feelings of her own sexuality and discovering taste for both men and women. And, you know, this is not a movie that is sort of drenched in plot. It's basically sort of scene to scene as these characters discover that they haven't exactly been experiencing life to the fullest in the way that they've sort of carved out what makes sense to them at the their respective ages. The aunt is in her early mid-40s. You know, is really just, you know, is obviously a very well-regarded author, but may not have time for anything else. And watching these two characters relate to each other, there's a really sort of refreshing manner in which we go about this. Like I said, this is not a film that deals with the sort of the familiar tropes. Every time you think that it's going to head down one of these cliche routes, it never does. It pulls back and actually spends time with these characters to have like actual conversations, you know, about curiosity, about you know, what each of them is going through, and you know, when they're realizing maybe one time says something insensitive, actually feels bad about it and apologizes. And you know, this is a movie that, you know, we got a movie that we'll be talking about very soon. That I talked about in Toronto called Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig's film. And this film actually makes a really great companion piece to that film, and I think as well to a film from earlier this year called Columbus. I think these are all three of these films are really terrific films about young women of teenage and college age who are discovering you know, a way to are wanting to escape from the norms that they've, you know, come to experience in the, you know, the brief period of their lives, and the difficulty that they have wanting to express themselves and be a bigger part of the world. This is a really wonderful little movie that it's playing at the Film Center right now. And like you said, I mean, putting it in the comparison with Lady Bird and Columbus is pretty high praise for me this year. So I hope that people find this movie and check it out.
Okay. Princess Sid, shot right here in Chicago. Yeah. And it's playing at the Siskel Center. So make sure you check that out. All right. Colin, tell us about Human Flow.
All right. This is a documentary on the refugee crisis that is happening globally. And I know when we think refugee crisis, we immediately think Syria. But this documentary goes all over the world, including here in the U.S. with the U.S.-Mexico border. And the movie throws a lot of statistics out there throughout its running time, which is a little over 2 hours. And it gets hard to keep up with them after a while. You know, but basically, you know, we're talking about 65 million people that have had to flee their homes because of war and famine and takeovers by fascist regimes and so on and so forth. And the director of this film is an artist named, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correct or not, and he documents them, these people, you know, while traveling to 23 different countries. So the movie just goes, is literally just all over the globe. And he often appears in the film, too, as a figure of empathy, while also offering some more lighthearted moments, as you kind of see him hanging out with some of these people and putting a smile on their face. He becomes a shoulder to cry on without being too overt about that in the film. He becomes a kind of, you know, his camera becomes a kind of confessional and means of catharsis. But because he has the presence of a gentle giant, there's something about him that people are drawn to. But in no way is he like a Michael Moore type thing where he's just all over the film. He just kind of appears in the frame sometimes, and you know it's him. And you know there's a very empathetic and very very smart and very philosophical soul behind the making of this film. You're not really following any one particular character or, you know, thread. There aren't a lot of story threads going on throughout it. It's just a movie that goes all over the place, to say that, you know, it's not just Syria, it's everywhere. And I've lost track of how many documentaries, about this subject that I've seen over the last few years. There's certainly been, I mean, just dozens, short films and features, but most of them have been very good, and this is definitely one of them. It does bring to mind one of the Academy Award nominated documentaries of last year, the name of which I'm forgetting. I want to say it's something Lake of Fire or I'm sorry, I should have looked that up before the show, but and it's very similar in that it's just very matter of fact, and the camera is just there observing, you know, what is happening. You do see a lot of rescue efforts, and really some of the most beautiful cinematography I've ever seen in a documentary. You know, drone cameras have become more and more commonplace in documentary filmmaking. This has some of the most gorgeous drone shots I've ever seen, so it's worth seeing on the big screen as well. And I think you can only do so at the Music Box right now.
Right.
So this is definitely a really great film on an important subject that I think will, you know, maybe have some legs into award season. It's definitely worth checking out.
Okay, so that's Human Flow, which is playing at the Music Box. All right, guys, hang on. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric Childress and Colin Suter, they join me every Monday morning for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews, and we'll also talk box office as well. And but we got to take a break for the news, and then we'll come back and talk more movies on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio. 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. My dad also will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time on a Monday morning. We're going to talk about foods and stuff that no longer exists that we miss and much more. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. But the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. We are reviewing the new movies. And Eric Childress, welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Hello.
So none of us saw A Bad Mom's Christmas.
Nope.
So, yeah.
I was going to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said no.
I never saw
it. It was just that simple.
You didn't see Bad Moms, Colin?
Nope, never did.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's not funny. And I don't know. I mean, I can't get myself psyched up to go see, you know, from the guys who wrote the Hangover movies. I just can't. I don't know.
Yeah, especially considering they didn't want anyone to see the movie in the first place, critic-wise.
No, there was no screenings for it?
Nope.
No, okay. Bad Moms Christmas, didn't see that one. But that we'll talk about how much money it made over the weekend as well. When we talk box office coming up. By the way, is it just me or is it the exact same plot at role reversal to Daddy's Home 2?
Yeah.
It's exactly the same plot, isn't it?
Yeah, mixed with the exact same plot of Bad Moms.
Right. Okay. All right. So, you know what? I don't know how to pronounce the name of this movie that you're going to review, Eric.
Novitiate, I think, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go.
That's pretty close.
All right. Well, let's hear about it.
Okay, this is a film that premiered at the Sundance Film Festival this year. It begins in the mid-1950s with a young girl who was only 7 years old, where her mother, played by Julia Nicholson, who's an agnostic, takes her to church. So just basically sort of ground her and give her an understanding of why her mother feels this way. Needless to say, much to her chagrin, the young girl actually takes to Catholicism, and 10 years later, as a 17-year-old girl, decides that she's actually going to pursue a vocation as a nun. So this puts her into a convent run by the Reverend Mothers, played by Melissa Leo, and many other young girls who are also hoping to make their vocation. A number of actresses we've come to know, Morgan Saylor, Liana Liberato, Diana Agron. And it's, you know, it becomes the, what happens is that the period that she's entering, enters the convent for her vocation, Vatican II comes down. And the Reverend Mother is informed about the changes that the church wants to make to the various vocations and what they actually believe and the set of standards that they set for themselves for Catholicism and to become, a wife of God, essentially. Reverend Mother doesn't quite take to that. She's very much in the old school ways, doling out punishment when things don't go the way they're supposed to, and she's rejecting all the things that she's come to believe herself, you know, throughout her entire life. While it seems like it might be this tug of war between the new faith and the old faith, that the whole Vatican II thing just seems like an excuse to basically have Melissa Leo ham it up at times and never really take us down the path that really has us sort of intellectually exploring these two schools of thought. For one, the movie never really makes clear throughout its entire running time why the young woman, and I forgot to mention, the 17-year-old woman is played by Margaret Qualley, why this character is so taken with Catholicism. It just seems to be almost like a plot device to set us up for this whole thing. And throughout the entire running time, we never really get a sense of who she is, why she believes this, why she feels the need to believe this. And then at the same time, you have Melissa Leo's character, where could be in very interesting exploration of someone who has given their entire life to God and is now being told by the sort of the status quo of the church that everything she's come to believe is going to be now be taken away from her. But again, it just sort of leads Melissa Leo to do some sort of hammy acting at times. And, you know, at Sundance, there was another movie about nuns that we saw come out earlier this summer. In fact, open our film festival called The Little Hours.
Right.
And I saw the film after that, and I felt that Melissa Leo probably would have been more at home in that movie than in this one, because, you know, this movie I don't want to say it doesn't shy away from it. It also doesn't really, you know, plunge really deep into the sort of the, again, a film about burgeoning sexuality. And while this movie takes it a lot more, or tries to take it a lot more seriously than The Little Hours did, almost standard, very Little Hours-esque. It just seems very cliched. It doesn't feel like there's any gravitas behind any of their feelings or repressions or anything like that. And it's really a shame, because this is a really fascinating period of the Catholic Church, and a movie like this, I think, would have basically more stones in exploring that, instead of taking what I think is a very obvious, sometimes very cheap route that ultimately, when I was done with it, just didn't amount to anything for me.
Okay. All right. Well, that's playing at, where is it playing? It's playing in at the River East. It's playing at River East. It's playing in Evanston. And it's playing at the Landmark Century. Okay. So there you go. All right. Okay, Colin, let's move on. Tell us about Okja.
Okay. Well, this started streaming on Netflix back in May. So if it sounds familiar, that's why. It's now getting a brief theatrical run. And so I saw this 6 months ago, so I'm going on the memory of that viewer.
Yeah, I saw it a while ago, too. So
yeah. So it tells the story of a young girl named Mija, who makes friends with an unusual creature, which she names Okja, in the woods of South Korea. But then a big corporation, I guess, discovers the creature and takes it back to New York. And this is all headed by Tilda Swinton, who's the CEO. And Jake Gyllenhaal plays a kind of crazed TV show host, kind of a warped version of Steve Irwin. He's in on this capture as well. Paul Dano plays the leader of an animal rights activist group who may or may not be able to help Mija, who travels to New York without much of a plan, but her sole intent is to find her friend and bring him back to South Korea. And Okja is this kind of weird crossbreed of animal that's never been seen before, kind of a, you know, sort of half pig, half dog, half rhinoceros, or a third rhinoceros, and, you know, just kind of sort of like playful and sweet, and there's definitely a believable bond between this kid and this creature. And this is directed by Bong Joon-ho, the guy who's responsible for sort of these kind of crossbreed genre films like The Host and Snowpiercer. They all don't fit in comfortably in a genre box. They're sort of sci-fi, fantasy, comedies, or action movies with big social commentary. And this is no exception. This is definitely kind of all over the place in terms of tone and style and the kind of film that it wants to be. And you know, his films run about 2 hours, and that sort of jumping around can be a bit much for some. I think it works for movies like The Host and Snowpiercer. But there's something a bit off about this one. I remember being where the tone was just so all over the place that it just, when a movie is like that and then it goes for heartfelt sentiment at the end, it's really hard to be on board with the movie if it's not anchored well. And this one didn't feel anchored very well to me. And I think a big problem with that is Jake Gyllenhaal, who seems to be in his own movie entirely. He hasn't really given a performance like this that I can remember, where he is just
so grating and so just needlessly over the top and flamboyant that it kind of kills the movie for me. I expect something like that out of Tilda Swinton and even Paul Dano to an extent. But for this movie, I thought it really kind of dragged it down several notches. There's a lot on display here that I admire. There's a lot of inventiveness, and I'm going to go for a story about a kid and their giant. This is like E.T. territory here. So I'm on board with a lot of it, but there's just, it's so all over the place, and Gyllenhaal is such a distraction that it kept me from enjoying the movie.
Okay. All right, you guys, hang on a second, okay? And when we come back, we'll get Eric's thoughts on Okja, and then I'll tell you what I thought of it as well. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. It's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews, and we shall have more of it right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We got the Monday Morning Movie Reviews that we're doing right now. My dad will call in and tell a joke. We got a Blackhawks Express, an unfortunate Blackhawks Express. We'll play that back as well. And we're going to talk about foods and stuff that no longer exist that we miss and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Before the break, Colin told us what he thought of the film Okja, which is now in theaters and actually was streaming on Netflix earlier. We've got Eric and Colin. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
Okay, so Eric, what did you think?
Yeah, I have a lot of the same problems that Colin has with it. I remember when I saw, I think we all saw this movie many, many months ago.
Yeah.
But what I remember really, really liking the first hour of this movie. I thought that it was kind of unique. I liked the little weird idea of the breeding of the super pig and the contest involved and all that kind of stuff. Even like the first appearance of Jake Gyllenhaal, I'm just like, oh, look, Jake Gyllenhaal's getting to have fun. He's getting to be goofy. He's going to be over the top. That's fun. And then on top of that, I think the girl is really good, and there's a really terrific chase sequence in that first hour on the highway. And I also like the idea of Paul Dano and his group of social warriors, trying to save this pig from being slaughtered. But by the second hour of the movie, a lot of those tonal problems just kind of rear its head. It's not nearly as fun. There's a lot of plot going on in this movie. And then there's really too much Jake Gyllenhaal. It gets to a point that you just kind of like put up your hands and like, okay, Jake, enough already. Like, it was fun once, and this is really a good example of a little going a long way. And then on top of that, Colin mentioned the movie, or making references to E.T. and, other movies that we can think about, Where the Wild Things Are, and other types of movies like this about children and their creature. But this is, Bong Joon-ho is a director that, I know everyone just loves The Host to death, and I'm not one of them, and mainly because of the way that he just is, to me, I'm just bothered by his attempts at tonal shifts, and it was really something that really put me off very early on in The Host. I like the monster stuff, the idea of injecting comedy with tragedy at the exact same time just kind of turned me off. And here you have a movie that, just describing the plot of the movie, sounds like, a kind of a hyped up family, a sweet family movie. But it is just peppered with F-bombs all over the place. And I am no prude by any stretch of the imagination, but like, what are you trying to do by having these characters like spout off like they're, in some ridiculous R-rated film? The dropping F-bombs and stuff like this in a movie that is supposed to be should be geared towards children or families just doesn't make any sense to me. And watching the film, I was always turned off by just how abrasive the film would get at times, by inserting that language into it. And again, I mean, I have no problem with F-bombs, but, you know, you have to sort of know your audience. And, you know, sometimes, again, I think that there's something fine with doing adult fairy tales. That, you know, Guillermo del Toro has one coming out in about a month. And, you know, but that movie establishes its tone very early on, and you go with it. Here, this one, you know, establishes the tone, and then is just going to, you know, if your parents took their children to this, they'd be covering their ears. But again, there's the tonal problems that I have a big problem with. The second hour just kind of just left me cold, and I was just ultimately very disappointed in what I thought was a very promising setup.
Yeah, I'm with you guys pretty much. I was disappointed in this because I really have enjoyed this guy's movies in the past. And I can't even figure out what Gyllenhaal is doing in the. I mean, it was really one of the weirdest performances I've seen, and you know, just too much. But there are things in the movie that I really enjoy. I think there's some technical aspects of the movie that I think are great. I think the effects are really good. I think the girl is good, and there are some interesting ideas in it. But it just gets, for me at least, it just gets sort of bogged down with its message. Because I think it's a pretty heavy-handed movie in terms of what, you know, like, you're, I guess when it's over, you shouldn't eat pork. I'm not really sure what the whole point of the message of the movie was, except that it was really heavy-handed and it didn't need to be there. And you're right about the shifts in tone, Eric. He's done that throughout his career, this guy. But it just seems really abrupt and it doesn't work here. And the differences in like performance, between each actor, there's like a ton of difference. Like they're all, I think everybody at some point is playing in a different movie. And of course we've already established that Jake Gyllenhaal is like in Mars, in this thing. There are things about it that I liked. It is well made and, I'm not gonna recommend it. And I mean, again, I saw it a long time ago, so I was not crazy about it. And I was disappointed because I like this guy's work. And if you want to see a really great movie that he directed, you should see Snowpiercer, because that's
tops.
Yeah, that's I think that's his best movie. But I'm a big fan of The Host. I thought The Host was great. So that's Okja, and it's not streaming on Netflix anymore, right?
It's not.
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I thought it's always streaming.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know Netflix as well as I think I do.
Because sometimes they take those things off. And I thought because, you know, they're given a theatrical release, I would imagine.
That's
possible,
yeah.
They maybe
it's still on Netflix.
Oh, it is. It's still on Netflix. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
So that's Okja, and it's still available on Netflix. And you can see it at a couple of theaters here in the area, including the Wilmette, which is the one that's the only one that's popping up. But it says it's in three theaters. And Wilmette is the only one that's popping up. So if you want to see it there, and again, don't take little kids to this movie. Eric, you're right about the F bombs and the switch in tone and everything. It's just kind of an uncomfortable a bit of a mess. And it's the craziest performance Jake Gyllenhaal's ever given, I think. I think it's the craziest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all right, guys, hang on, okay.
Okay.
All right. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here, and we are going to take a break for the news. And when we come back, we've got the big movie of the week to talk about, which made a lot of money over the weekend. And that's Thor Ragnarok, which made $121 million over the weekend, which is huge. So we'll talk about Thor Ragnarok after the news, which is next on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It is Monday morning, and that means a little bit later on my dad will call in and tell a jokey time. And we will also talk about food that we miss that isn't around anymore. And we got a Blackhawks Express to play. But right now we are in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every Monday to talk movies. And we got the big release for this week is the one that we're going to be talking about next. And let's welcome the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello there.
All right, Eric, tell us about Thor Ragnarok.
Okay. Well, this is the latest in the standalone Thor movies in the Marvel cinematic universe. As the movie opens, Thor, Chris Hemsworth, has been imprisoned by a fire demon known as Surtur. And Surtur warns him that Asgard is headed towards sort of this prophesized, the ending of Asgard, which is known as Ragnarok. Believes that time is coming. He has to put his crown next to the eternal flame, and, you know, then Asgard will be destroyed, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, Thor defeats Surtur and heads back to Asgard to find his father, Odin, who he is told is not on Asgard anymore, and surprisingly finds his brother, Loki, still alive. And so the two of them set out to find what Loki actually did with Odin. And when they find him, they discover that Odin's exile is now going to be linked to the release of their sister and half-sister named Hela, played by Kate Blanchett, who once was a mighty warrior, fought alongside Odin, but her, you know, she, you know, got too big for her britches and was basically banished into the hellish landscape or something like that. But she's back, and she's here to reclaim the throne on Asgard, but she gets rid of Loki and Thor so she can take over. And basically thrusts them out into space, and Thor ends up on a planet named Sakaar, which is basically this garbage planet that is ruled over by a man named the Grand Master, played by Jeff Goldblum, who basically spends his time, you know, not taking care of his citizens and just creating large Colosseum-like fights for their amusement, forcing Thor into one of these battles. And he's reunited with the Hulk, who has been trapped there for some time as the Grand Champion. And Thor has to figure out how to get back to Asgard to save his world, defeat Hela, and all that. He's going possibly hoping to be joined by one of the surviving members of the Valkyrie, who is now on Sakaar. Played by Tessa Thompson, and, you know, also possibly enlist Loki's help as well. So here you have a film that was directed by Taika Waititi, who has given us two of the really terrific independent comedies of the last few years, What We Do in the Shadows and last year's Hunt for the Wilder People. And as Marvel has had a knack for choosing directors that we don't think are the right fit for the material, but if you're going to turn Thor into a comedy, Taika Waititi might be your person. And in that respect, he kind of is, because this is a film that is absolutely far more playful in tone than the previous Thor movies. Branagh's film had a touch of that, but, you know, setting up its characters and, you know, took itself seriously enough. This film has got the pedal full blast on the comedy from the opening scene of the movie, and then particularly on Sakaar, where Jeff Goldblum is at peak Goldblum, just doing his thing, and you know, reputation be damned. He is just going to be everyone's Goldblum in this movie. And, you know, and it leads to a lot of very funny situations, our commentary, dialogue between a lot of these characters. And the film has this tone that, you know, it gets away with for a while until the plotting starts to catch up with it. And this is a film with a lot of plot. You can tell that from the way I had to set this thing up. I got half of it done there. And so by the time this movie sort of settles in to wanting us to care about what's going to happen on Asgard and Thor and Loki and all these characters, it's kind of started to worn out its comic bravado. And the big laughs early on then tend to repeat themselves a little bit and become a little more muted. And then by the time you get to basically the final half hour where everyone is just, you know, kicking butt and, you know, throwing, you know, demon creatures off a bridge and stuff like that, we don't really care so much about the stakes. At least I didn't. Cate Blanchett, I think, is woefully underused in the film. I think Tessa Thompson's character is woefully underwritten, and I didn't really buy much about her characters, even when she should have this grand transformation to embracing her old Valkyrie status. It just rings false. It just never feels like it's some triumphant moment for her. You know, by the end of it, I was just kind of tired of the whole thing. I was, while I remembered that I had some big laughs during the movie, a few at Goldblum's expense and some at the Hulk, by the end of it, I was just kind of, you know, I was just kind of done with this whole thing. So it was kind of a disappointment for me.
Okay. All right, Colin?
I like the movie a little bit more than Eric, and I think one of the when I come into these movies, I don't remember what happened at the end of the last film, you know, except maybe on certain occasions. But, like, as far as a Thor movie, like, the last thing I need is another Thor movie, especially after that second Thor movie, which was a slog to sit through. And I've always been very critical about studios, not just Marvel, but studios who hire these quirky indie directors to do their big tentpole franchises and then not letting them have their voice in it anywhere. And, you know, it ends up just being kind of a standard cookie cutter blockbuster film. Whereas this one, it looked like they gave Waititi a lot of free rein here, and I appreciate that. The movie is funny. I laughed quite a bit during this movie, and I seem to gravitate more towards these Marvel movies that don't take themselves too seriously, like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. This definitely feels like at home in that part of the Marvel universe. And having Waititi there, I think you can tell there's a director here who is at the controls, who really knows how to make this work as a comedy. I agree. The female characters are underwritten, and the newer characters that come in, I don't really have much of an attachment to. On the other hand, then there's Jeff Goldblum, who I enjoy. I love that he's kind of ruling with a fist that has no trace of iron in it whatsoever. It's just very, very loose and very funny. I like all the stuff between Thor and Loki. I like that Loki is becoming more and more of an anti-hero as these things go along. You know, we kind of forget all the mayhem and death and destruction that he caused in the Avengers movie the longer this one goes on. I kind of enjoy that. So I like the inventiveness that comes in with this, that Waititi brings to it. I think there's a really funny use of a Willy Wonka song, I remember at one point. You know, I always come into these Marvel movies a little just kind of like, oh, here we go, more of the same. And some of this is more of the same. You know, a lot of people smashing into the ground and then everything around them just blows over. And a lot of the usual stuff that we see over and over and over again. But I like that there's a distinct comedic voice at the controls here, and that makes this one more fun than I expected it to be.
Okay. All right, guys, hang on, okay? Mm-hmm. Eric, hang on. Colin, hang on, and I'll tell you what I thought of Thor Ragnarok after we take a break. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower here until 5 a.m. Before the break, Eric and Colin told us what they thought of Thor Ragnarok. Welcome back, guys.
Hello. Thank you.
Okay, I like this movie quite a bit more than you guys did, quite a bit more. I thought it was massively entertaining, and I laughed from beginning to end. It does have the standard, comic book movie throwdown at the end with all the effects and the big battle sequences and stuff. But I still think that a lot of that was really well done. I can listen to the Immigrant Song all day long, and to have two major battle sequences with the Immigrant Song playing just made me very happy. And I thought the Waititi handled the action sequences really well, considering that he's mostly known for comedy. But the reason why I enjoyed this movie so much is it's just funny. I mean, I thought that Thor, both of the Thor movies for me were kind of stiff, and the character doesn't really do it for me, you know. But I liked him a lot in this movie. I thought the Thor character was very funny and entertaining. The stuff between him and Loki is great. The whole get help thing, I laughed my ass off during that. It was hysterical. I thought Cate Blanchett was good in it. I think she's having a lot of fun. And I thought that the Carl Urban stuff was a little weird. Like whatever arc that character has. But
the only character with an arc?
Yeah. Well, it pays off at the end though.
Right.
And Goldblum, what can you say about Jeff Goldblum, man? I mean, he's just hilarious. The scene with him and Hiddleston sitting on the couch watching the battle was hysterical. Like, every time they cut to those two guys, the reaction between Hiddleston cheering and I just thought it was great. I was endlessly entertained by this movie, and I laughed out loud throughout the entire thing. And I want to mention Waititi's voice work here. He's there's this character named Korg, which is kind of this big sort of, he looks like the Thing, the comic book character, the Thing. He's like made of stone or whatever, and his voice work is hysterical. That character is very, very funny, and he adds a great vocal work to that. I thought Tessa Thompson was tremendous in it. I thought she was great. I thought she kicked ass, and I really liked her in it as well. The scene in Doctor Strange's house is hilarious. I laughed through that entire sequence. I was laughing my ass off during that entire sequence. I just thought this was very entertaining, and I laughed from beginning to end. And you're right, Colin, that this has much more in common with the tone of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. And I'm fine with that because I really like those movies. And I like my comic book movies, to be more fun than deadly serious, which is, that's just those are the kind of movies that I like. Those comic book movies. And I thought that they took the Thor character and pulled it out of the doldrums, because the first two movies, especially the second one, were just nothing. But this is just, there's a lot of life going on. It's colorful. It's funny. The effects are good. I thought the action was really good. And I had a great time. I had an absolute great time watching this movie. So I'm highly recommending it. I really, really liked it. So that's Thor Ragnarok. All right. Next week, some more big ones coming out next week. Daddy's Home 2, Lady Bird, Last Flag Flying, which is Linklater's latest. You mentioned Kenneth Branagh, Murder on the Orient Express, with kind of a big cast, is coming out as well. And so there you go. Those are some of the big ones for next week.
And also 7852, that great documentary about the making of the shower scene in Psycho.
All right. Right. Okay. Very, very cool. All that stuff is coming out next week, and we will review all of those. Colin, thanks, man.
All right, thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. All right, Eric, let's jump into some box office.
Mm-hmm.
So, Thor. Wow, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I know last week we were talking about it, and you were saying high 80s maybe.
Yeah, I think kind of like high 80s, low 90s is what I was thinking for this.
Wow, $121 million. That's huge.
Yeah. I mean, I think you see this sometimes that, even the anticipation of a Marvel movie can be helped out when you've had kind of what has been kind of a doldrums at the box office for the last month, basically. We haven't really had a big movie like this, and everyone seemed to be saving their money for it. And clearly the reviews helped. The fact that it is more of a comedy than, it's kind of an action, a Marvel movie that fits in perfectly to all the other Marvel movies. It's not like you even need to have seen the other Thor movies, really. A few things, might help, but you can generally see this movie and not have to be tied into all the other movies. And it surprised me just how high it was. I thought that it did have an outside chance to maybe break 100, but the Thor movies in the past, like 65 million, 85 million openings, and Thor the Dark World kind of sank.
Yeah.
After its opening, not a lot of good word of mouth on that. But this one, you know, so I thought, you know, it would do I didn't think it was going to do better than Dark World. But ultimately, you know, I think that just the tone of this one and the fact that there's not just nothing else out there just increased it dramatically.
Yeah, yeah. I was surprised to see that number. I really was. Number two is A Bad Mom's Christmas, $17 million, $21 million since it opened because it opened on Wednesday.
Yeah, and I think that this is – and I should have examined this one a little bit closer – is that I think that this, you know, opening kind of an R-rated, raunchy type comedy at this period of the year has not worked out great in the past. You think last year, Office Christmas Party only did like 55 million. I mean, Sisters the year before did pretty well, but you know, I think, you know, you have the casting there that certainly helped. And, you know, and you just, you know, Bad Moms was just last year. You know, it's not like anyone was clamoring for a sequel this quickly to that movie. And you also had Girls Trip this summer, which did very well, which is basically the same movie.
And then what was the other one with Kate McKinnon?
Rough Night.
Rough Night, yeah.
Yeah, which nobody went
to
see
that. Yeah, nobody went to see that, yeah.
Yeah, I think Bad Moms Christmas has already outgrossed Rough Night, I think. Pretty close to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think that anyone – I just felt like, do we need another Bad Moms movie? Weren't they pretty bad the first time? Well, not really. Yeah. But that was a surprise hit, and they greenlit that thing right before last Christmas, actually, the Bad Moms Christmas. And, you know, I mean, it's also not Christmas yet.
Right. All right, cool. All right, Eric, thanks, man.
Sure thing.
We'll talk to you next week. Eric Childress, everybody. And now we're going to take a break for the news on 720 WGN.